Ms. Oliveri.
Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning, Mr. Hunstad. If it may please the Court, I'm here on behalf of the defendant appellant, Alan Helton. I represented Mr. Helton under a CJA appointment at both the district court and this court. And we're here appealing the reasonableness of the sentence that was imposed at the district court level.
This must be our day for cases with defendants who criminal history would be off the chart. What category beyond six would Mr. Helton be in if
depending on
extended on?
Correct. Well, I must say that Mr. Helton and I are both reservedly grateful that his criminal history points are certainly less than those of predecessor counsels. But he had 19 criminal history points, as calculated by the parties and the court. If one were to gradate up offense level per 2 to 3 points, I think we're looking at about a 2 to 3 point incremental increase if the court were to do that.
It sounds like criminal history category 8 or 9 again.
Well, if one were to look at it that way, unfortunately, the district court did not do that. The district court did not undertake any incremental review or discussion in this case and did not explain why a 5-point incremental increase would be appropriate in this case. The reason I say 5-point incremental increase is that would be the sentencing guideline range that encompassed the 16-month statutory maximum sentence that was imposed in this case. I'd also like to note that on June 4th of last year, Mr. Helton pled guilty to conspiring with his brothers to transport stolen vehicles from Wisconsin to Illinois for resale. The government agreed that should Mr. Helton plead guilty, which he did, that it would recommend that he be credited for accepting responsibility. He did that. He accepted responsibility, both in pleading guilty and at the sentencing hearing. He apologized to the court. He acknowledged that he had failed tremendously in involving himself in the criminal enterprise with his brothers. Both the pre-sentence writer and the court recognized
that song and dance routine becomes not believable. Now, as I said in the last case, the only way you can accumulate a criminal history like this is to persuade a judge to slap you on the wrist and then commit another crime and persuade another judge of that, right? And eventually you find a judge who isn't so credulous. And your client finally met a judge who wasn't credulous. It's hard to see what the problem is.
Well, and I can certainly understand the argument that the court makes. However, I would also note that I wasn't present, nor were any of us present at Mr. Helton's prior court proceedings. The only one I was present for, the only one that I have a record of, is the one that was before Judge Randa. I do not know how sincerely Mr. Helton expressed his acceptance of responsibility or his remorse on prior occasions. But I can say that he did express his acceptance of responsibility and remorse on this occasion. And for that, he does make some progress in rehabilitating himself. And even to those who might find this argument naive, I believe, shows that he's making a step in the right direction toward his rehabilitation and against reoffending in the future.
He's learned that this is a formula that has worked with other judges, and so he repeats the formula, but he finds the judge says, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. I mean, but this is, you know, fool the judiciary 19 times, shame on you.
Whether that be the case or not, Your Honor, it's still, I believe, an obligation of the district court to make an incremental assessment of what is the appropriate sentence in an instant case with an instant defendant. That was not done here. An explanation was not offered for why that court decided a 5-point jump from the calculated and agreed upon sentencing guideline and offense level was necessary. Mr. Helton is not asking this court, and most importantly, Mr. Helton accepted responsibility. The court found he was entitled to acceptance of responsibility inferentially by accepting the recommendation of the pre-sentence writer, and yet gave him no credit for acceptance of responsibility by sentencing him to the maximum possible sentence. It is not Mr. Helton's argument that every defendant who pleads guilty and accepts responsibility can avoid a maximum sentence. There might be those occasions, and in fact, there have been cases before this court in which that happened. However, it is his argument that in this case, based on the facts of this case, and the fact that his calculated and agreed-upon offense level did not fall within the 60-month maximum sentence that was imposed, that it was unreasonable for the district court not to give him at least some credit for accepting responsibility and expressing true remorse at a sentencing hearing. As I said before, the court did not offer any explanation whatsoever for why it chose the 5-point incremental increase it did to impose the maximum sentence on Mr. Helton. And in so doing, the court ignored the suggested and thoughtful manner of dealing with such an issue that was offered by this court in U.S. v. Cross and that's offered by the Sentencing Commission in Section 4A1.3, in which it's recommended that a district court, in dealing with a criminal defendant who has points in excess of Category 6, take that incremental approach. I would refer this court to the language from a Tenth Circuit case that I acknowledge predates Booker and thus is not a standard but can still be used as a guidepost for reviewing district court decisions to vary upward from the sentencing guideline range that's calculated. And it talks about the fact that it is important for courts to use a more stringent analysis when varying upward for Category 6 defendants, because to do otherwise would just say that there are higher categories, which the Sentencing Commission has rejected. At this point, I would reserve any time I have left for rebuttal. Thank you.
Certainly, counsel. Mr. Honstad.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Gregory Honstad for the United States. The district court in this case did not abuse its discretion in imposing the 60-month sentence that it did. The district court's sentence was both procedurally sound and substantively reasonable.
The problem here is he gets absolutely nothing for pleading guilty.
That's right.
In the preceding case, at least, you know, he had a 60-month maximum. He got a 57-month sentence. So, throwing a deck chair off the Queen Mary maybe doesn't make that big a difference. But here, he got nothing for pleading guilty.
That's right.
Now, I would have thought in the great Eastern District of Wisconsin, where I was a district judge for many years, we didn't give the maximum sentence. If you pled guilty, you got a little bit off the top.
And that typically is the case. But regardless of what the government would have done, and here the government did recommend a sentence of 37 months.
The government recommended 37 months.
Correct. And your Honor, or any one of your honors, may have imposed a different sentence, but that's not really the issue. The issue is whether the sentence that Judge Randa decided upon was reasonable. And district judges can choose to sort of weigh these factors differently, and the fact that he pled guilty, while that may have suggested a lower sentence, was appropriate. It was completely within the district court's discretion to determine that for a defendant who had the criminal history that Mr. Helton did, the criminal history considerations substantially outweighed any consideration that should have been given for pleading guilty.
Should a judge, if he feels that way, give you the option of withdrawing your guilty plea and take your chances? I mean, you go to trial, maybe you got a 1 out of 100.
Well,
chance you get a friendly juror and you can get acquitted and walk, so...
I think that's typically not allowed. That is, we always include language in our plea agreements, and I think that that Rule 11 also provides that disagreement with what a pre-sentence report comes back with or disagreement over a sentence that a district judge might impose, those things aren't grounds for withdrawing a guilty plea.
I'm talking about the judge. The judge saying, look, I'm going to give you the maximum sentence, absolutely nothing except for pleading guilty, saving us the time and effort of bringing in jurors and witnesses and going through all that. But I'm still going to give you the maximum sentence. On the other hand, if you want to go to trial, that's your right. We'll bring these people in. But you're not going to get anything for pleading guilty. Should I have an obligation as the trial judge to tell him something like that?
Well, I don't think so. In this case, actually, there was something of a telegraphing that was going to happen because Alan Helton's co-defendant, his brother Danny Helton, was sentenced prior to Alan being sentenced and under very similar circumstances also received a statutory 60-month maximum sentence.
I thought somebody got a 51-month sentence.
He got a 51-month sentence, but that 9-month reduction was the result of some credit for time he had already served.
Okay.
But here again, you know, the district court clearly applied the 3553A factors. The district court began by considering and discussing the nature and circumstances of the offense, but clearly it was the defendant's criminal history that drove the court's decision to impose a 60-month sentence. Again, the defendant had 19 criminal history points, which is, as we've already noted, well above what's needed to fall within criminal history category 6. And if there were such a thing, likely would have placed the defendant in criminal history category 8 or 9. But even those 19 points, while they reflect many aspects of Mr. Helton's criminal history, including certain of his convictions and including the fact that he committed this offense both while on supervision for a prior offense and shortly after being released from custody on yet another offense, even those 19 criminal history points fail to reflect certain other aspects of Mr. Helton's criminal history. Those 19 points don't reflect, for example, the repeated pattern of committing offenses shortly after being released from custody for earlier offenses. The 19 criminal history points don't reflect that the defendant also had 12 additional criminal convictions that scored no points under the sentencing guidelines. And those 19 points don't reflect that the defendant had a total of 21 convictions over a period of only 18 years. A number that I think is even more remarkable, given that for significant portions of those 18 years, the defendant was either in jail or in prison. The district court explained that it was attempting to determine what the likelihood was that the defendant was going to commit crimes in the future and based its prediction in that regard on the defendant's criminal history. The district court noted that other sentences that had been imposed in the past really had no effect in terms of deterring in any way or for any substantial period of time additional offenses by Mr. Helton. And one of those prior sentences that had proven...
Isn't that an overstatement?
What's that?
Isn't that an overstatement? Perhaps it reduced the rate of his crimes from 10 a month to 8 a month.
True.
It just didn't reduce them to zero.
Correct. And some of these offenses, for example, in 1999, he sustained a conviction for burglary and was sentenced to 6 years of imprisonment. And even that substantial sentence had no impact in terms of...
That's the same point. You can't tell whether it had no effect. What you know is the effect was not large enough to prevent him from committing this crime, but it may have reduced the total number of crimes he committed.
It may have, but he not only committed this offense after being sentenced to 6 years, he actually picked up 3 convictions within a matter of about 5 months of being released from custody on that earlier offense, and then went on to pick up 2 more convictions before committing this offense, again, all after serving that 6-year sentence. So with all of this as backdrop, including the failure of the 6-year sentence to maybe produce the desired deterrent effect for the defendant, the district court quite reasonably concluded that a 5-year sentence, which, again, was the maximum available to him for this offense, was necessary both to protect the public from future crimes of the defendant and to have any hope of substantially deterring him from committing future crimes. And unless the court has any further questions, I would simply conclude by asking that the sentence be affirmed.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Anything further, Ms. Lawberry?
If the district court or this court decides that an outside a guideline sentence is warranted, it must consider the extent of the deviation from that guidelines sentence and ensure that the justification for varying either up or down is sufficiently compelling to support the degree of the variance. It is uncontroversial that a major variance should be supported by a more significant justification than a minor one. Mr. Helton would submit that the variance in this case was substantial. He went from facing 30 to 37 months to a sentence of 60 months. That is a substantial increase in the sentence from what he faced to what was imposed. It is his position that the district court, though it gave a reason for varying upward, that being his criminal record, it did not provide a sufficient justification for why the particular sentence it chose was appropriate or reasonable, most notably in light of Mr. Helton's having pled guilty, having relieved the government of its responsibility to prove his guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, and having shown remorse for his actions. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel, and we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case and your assistance to the court and your client. The case is taken under advisement.